Good evening and welcome back to another program of A Closer Look. I'm your host, Laurie Hackett. We're going to jump right in today, and we're so excited to have Jared Mast in the studio. Welcome, Jared.
Thanks for having me, Laurie.
Absolutely. You were here before how long ago?
I'd say six months ago.
Because I just saw your picture. Well, we're here. We always love talking about Greater Easton Development Partnership, of course, but there's so much happening in Easton right now. So before we get into all that, if you could just remind our listeners about the mission and the activity of GEDP.
So GDP's recent history goes back to 2006 when civic leaders came together and decided that it was time to look at different ways of bringing Easton back. You know, Easton suffered from some repercussions of urban renewal and disinvestment. So Lafayette College, Lafayette Ambassador Bank at the time, the city of Easton, came together and launched a number of programs. East Ambassadors Program, Clean and Safe Program, which now has a counterpart in Allentown and South Bethlehem. The Easton Main Street Initiative, which was to bring small business community together and to kind of get the grassroots volunteer spirit aligned with the goals of the economic development plan. Double down on the tourism assets, so the State Theater, Crayola Experience, Lafayette College itself and its destination assets, and then just keep at it. And so, you know, it's been now almost 20 years of that effort. Our mission is to support the economic vitality and cultural vibrancy of the city of Easton. Very focused on the four neighborhoods of Easton, so downtown first and foremost, but also West Ward, South Side, College Hill. Our programs have grown. So we have a West Ward Community Initiative. We have a Easton Garden Works, which is an urban agricultural initiative. We do some public art through Easton Murals and also through the Main Street Initiative. We do a number of special events, which I think we'll get to, but everything from PA Bacon Fest to Weekly Live at the Falls to collaboration on Easton Winter Village with the city of Easton. Growing, I would say, by the day.
Right. And how long have you been the leader?
I have been the executive director since 2016, but I actually started with GDP in 2012, right as I finished up grad school and was helping as project manager for the Easton Public Market. So it's another program or project of GDP that I helped launch and is a fixture of downtown Easton and really exciting, I think, project for the city at the time and has helped bring different types of interest into the city, whether that's Lafayette moving staff downtown or Hearst bringing its team downtown. Public Market has been kind of one of those anchors. More recently, we upgraded the plaza behind the Public Market, the Air Products Plaza. Right now, we're hosting kind of a slow build on the World Cup, but these community-based watch parties that have been really, really fun to watch kind of grow. We actually had an impromptu watch party for the Knicks championship game over the weekend. And so, yeah, we definitely try to work on programming community gathering spaces. The Public Market is part of that, and the Air Products Plaza is a complement to that.
So if you've been there 10 years, is there something you wished you knew when you started? Like, what has surprised you over these 10 years?
I mean, I think the more I work in general, like you kind of figure out that the ideas are the easy part. You know, execution and good execution takes time. It takes planning. It takes the right team. And related to that, you can't do it all yourself. So, like, I've become more aware of the limits of my own capacity, especially since having a kid 3 years ago. And kind of life balance priorities that come out of that. So right now, I'm really intent with board support on building the team. And it's not just about succession planning. It's not just about like freeing me up, but it's about having the right capacity to do the amount of work that we think we can and should do. And so I think like when you're young, you think you just work harder and longer and you can get everything done. But that leads to burnout. It leads to dropped balls. And I think sometimes you have blind spots on what you're actually really good at and not really good at. And bringing somebody in that is really good at something that maybe you're just okay at actually helps grow the organization better.
Gosh, well said. Really being aware of your skills and competencies and what maybe it's best left to somebody else with that expertise. That's awesome.
Just to follow up on that, I think as an executive director, you have to kind of be a jack of all trades. You have to know finance, know how to write a grant narrative.
Raise money.
Have some social intelligence to exist in the community and bring friends to the organization. But there are limits to that. And there's capacity, just time and energy. And you got to keep your cup full in some way or another.
Well, let's talk about Lehigh Valley 250th. I know that Easton, the center of it all, and especially your organization and you personally are really involved. Share with our listeners a little bit about what's happening with the 250th, please.
Yeah, so the 250th is a nationwide convening around the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. You know, Easton holds a very special place in that mm-hmm. history, being one of the three locations that the Declaration was read on July 8th, 1776. We have historically, over the last 50 or so years, celebrated that moment through Easton Heritage Day. Different volunteer groups came together and helped celebrate the reading with reenactments and history and different types of interpretations of history. Alongside that, I think Easton has a very special place in the history of the country, and insofar as we commemorated the Marquis de Lafayette by naming the institution Lafayette College after. And that was at the first 50th anniversary. So Lafayette is coming up on 200 years because they were founded at the 50th anniversary of our country in 1826. So obviously Lafayette College is a huge institutional partner for a lot of the things we do. I'm a graduate of Lafayette in 2004, and I try to build on those relationships as best I can. We have some board members who are also affiliated or past graduates. Adam McMahon, you know, is a new board member mm-hmm. of GDP and a more recent grad. So just trying to build that relationship with the college and celebrate together. I think Easton has a very special kind of relationship to the 250th because we're not just doing it this year. We do it every year. Right. And, you know, we want to create durable cultural traditions that we can gather in authentic places and do authentic things. And I think Easton does that really well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain ubiquity to fireworks and now kind of drone shows. But Easton, in terms of Heritage Day, is, I think, a very unique tradition that is very specific to Easton. It takes place not in a parking lot, not... It takes place in the historical center mm-hmm. of our city.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to Lafayette and the city and GEDP, how are other businesses or nonprofits involved in 250th celebrations?
Yeah, we're closely aligned with LV250, which is a group that came together around the organizing principle of the 250th. Jessica Edris has done a really good job bringing both people and resources together. There's a core group there with the DNL and the Siegel Museum or the Northampton County Genealogical and Historical Society.
And could you explain DNL for our listeners?
Yeah, the DNL National Historic Corridor. So all these things are a bit of a mouthful, even GDP, Greater Easton Development Partnership. You know, Historic Bethlehem is part of that contingent as well. And so I think there was recognition that Northampton County and the Lehigh Valley's historic quotient was high, but we needed a new organizing principle to bring mm-hmm. them together. And I think the LV250 and Jess's work helped do that. And on the heels of that, Jess's work and the work of that core group also brought resources to the table to help celebrate the 250th, which we had been working on for quite a while. You know, going back to 2019, sitting down with Maurice Luker, who I think you knew mm-hmm. over the years at Lafayette College, he had an 11 by 17 printout of all the things that we could do around 2026. But it took a different type of, like, cross-partner, cross-collaborative mm-hmm. organizing work and organizing principle to actually make it happen. And we got to the finish line just in time. And, you know, I don't think you were at the press conference, but the announcement of $1 million in state funding to support these efforts, which had ArtsQuest, Iron Pigs, the DNL, and our elected officials, bipartisan support, so another kind of interesting and important part. It was a pre-celebratory moment, but a celebratory moment in and of itself mm-hmm. that this came together in a way that it did.
Yeah, the collaboration of what's happening around LV250 is fantastic. I know I attended some of those early planning meetings, and just to see other executive directors from nonprofits and arts organizations all coming together saying, how can we really, truly, remarkably, historically celebrate this year is really exciting.
Yeah.
What about some specific events for any listeners? Any other things coming up that you might recommend that people look for, listen for, and attend?
Yeah, if you bear with me, I think the World Cup is a nice build-up to our celebration of Heritage Day, so I would welcome people to Easton.
And by the way, just an aside, I was at the public market the other day, mm-hmm. on Wednesday, I think, and walked through the Air Products Plaza, and it was the middle of the afternoon, and there were some people out there having lunch and watching some games, the middle of the afternoon. Yeah. It was fabulous. Yeah.
It's a great vibe. It's a different vibe than other types of watch parties. It's more, I would say, relaxed. Yep. You know, it's family friendly. If you're if you want to make a day of coming to the Krill Experience and watching a half of football or soccer, you can do that. We're hosting all the games during kind of normal business hours from Wednesday through Sunday at the public market, with some stretch for important games like the U.S.'s game against Australia on Friday. And then as we get closer to Heritage Day, which Heritage Day itself is July 11th. And historically, we've always celebrated after July 4th to kind of reference the fact that the reading actually happened on July 8th, so after July 4th. There's also an urban myth that fireworks are cheaper on days that are not July 4th. But I think that's the mayor's story to tell. Yeah, but the first kickoff event, which is a semi-exclusive affair, but the tickets are open. If you search for Declaration Dinner on July 8th, that's a collaborative fundraiser with the Siegel Museum. Mm-hmm. Again, National or Northampton County Genealogical and Historical Society, where we have a shared budget. It's a shared fundraiser. It came together rather quickly, but we felt we needed to commemorate the reading on July 8th. That'll have a reading as part of a dinner at Time Restaurant in Easton. So there's tickets available to the public. There's also sponsor opportunities. We'd be happy to talk about that with folks. And then we get closer to the weekend. So Friday, July 10th is what we're calling the Bachman Block Party. We're working with, again, the Siegel Museum, and they're going to program the Bachman Public House, which used to be this historic tavern where colonial leaders met and stayed. And, we're inviting people into that space with the Siegel Museum, but also throwing a block party where Raylan Baxter, who's one of our headliners for Heritage Day itself, is going to play a stripped-down set. And we'll just have a fun block party. We're also unveiling another collaborative kind of touch point with Blue Zones, Lehigh Valley. Mm-hmm. We're organizing around creating what we're calling a block party trailer or a party cart, which we can roll out to different community members who want to host or help host a block party in their neighborhood. So we're going to show that off. You know, we're talking about tables, chairs, speakers, things you need to throw a block party mm-hmm. that you might not have in your basement, especially if you're a renter. Then moving on to Heritage Day itself, July 11th, we work with a lot of our historical partners in the morning. So the History Row and bringing the farmer's market back to Center Square is kind of the first part of the day. We've gotten a little bit of flack from moving the Easton Farmer's Market from Center Square, its historic location that launched in 1752, to Larry Holmes Drive. But the customer experience on Larry Holmes Drive is just much better. We have more vendors, more space. As a parent, you don't have to worry about your kid running out into traffic. And so on July 11th for Heritage Day, the Farmers Market will come back to Center Square for that day to kind of get us back to our original history. And noon itself is kind of the historic high point of the day. We have a reenactment with Broadway-trained actors. It's immersive theater, I guess you could call it, where there's a group of reenactors that kind of lead up to the reading of the Declaration of Independence through the event, bring it to the main stage at Center Square, and you get to hear, I think, an authentic reenactment mm-hmm. of the reading in a way that's sensitive to the history of Easton, sensitive to the history of the country. And then from there, we use that stage and another stage at Third and Ferry. So we'll kind of do the alternating stage framework to bounce back between bands throughout the day. Yeah, and then fireworks actually happen on Sunday. That's a city affair. We purposefully disconnected Heritage Day from fireworks celebration so folks can kind of concentrate on the fireworks mm-hmm. on Sunday.
And Jared, where would people go to find out more details about all these things? Is there a website?
So, I mean, I'll just give a plug for Discover Lehigh Valley. Like, they're doing a really good job curating all of the LV250 stuff. That's actually the first link that comes up for the Declaration Dinner. So click through, buy tickets. You can also get to that ticketing page from our website, eastonpartnership.org. And then a lot of the information or all the information on Heritage Day itself is on our heritageday.org website. And if anybody has questions, they can also just send me an email at jared@eastonpartnership.org.
Perfect. When you think then about why this is working so well, why do you think so much positivity and so much growth and so much forward thinking and development is happening in Easton?
I think stability of partnership and collaboration is a big part of it. You mm-hmm. have, you know, the mayor gets a lot of credit. His team gets a lot of credit. We work really well with the city. We work really well with the college. I think, you know, I won't name the developer, but I once rode in an elevator with a developer that was looking at a different city. And I was like, why isn't more happening here? And he's like, there's no stability. And development's not the be all end all. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's challenges and there's downsides to certain types of development, which is a whole other conversation. But I think the other thing is that GDP and the city have done it the hard way. You know, it's been kind of slog it out, organic growth, small projects, some big projects along the way. One thing I talk a lot about is like, what is economic development? It in my mind, part of it is shared wealth creation. So how many people are actually at the table to be part of that rising tide? Mm-hmm. I personally think that the more people that benefit from community investment and community pride and tourism growth, the better and more durable your local economics are. The last thing I would say is that I think GDP authentically brings people together and really focuses on third places and social cohesion in a way that's a little bit different. It's not mm-hmm. just about monetizing an event or selling right. a ticket. A lot of our events are free. Most of my staff lives in the community, so we're receptive to feedback, and we change things based on that feedback. We do new things based on input from the community. And then I think the last piece of ESIN is that we've always kind of had this like underdog mentality where you gotta, mm-hmm. you know, you're scrappy, punch above your weight. And so I think like we're always trying to push and kind of prove ourselves. And I think that's part of how our staff approaches it. I think it's how the mayor approaches it. And just because we're a small city or a city of the third class doesn't mean we need like third class entertainment or third class assets. So we're all trying our best, and that's actually our vision for GDP, to kind of sum it all up, is to be a model city in terms of inclusivity and programming and economic development.
Jared, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. And again, listeners, we were joined by Jared Mast, who's Executive Director of the Greater Easton Development Partnership. And we'll be right back.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Laurie Hackett, your host. We just had a great chat with Jared Mast of Greater Easton Development Partnership. But now joining us in the studio is Rachel Moyer. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, thanks for being here. We just had such a good conversation, you and I did, at a recent wonderful Women's Business Council event. I'm just so excited. I've watched you. You're a young professional. You're doing so much in the Valley. So it means a lot to have you join us today. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, sure. Well, let's jump in. So I know you are VP of Operations for Turnstone Creative.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about what Turnstone Creative is.
Yes. So we are a marketing and video agency, creative agency. We also do PR. Those are kind of our three big services that we lead with. We're a recent merger of two past agencies, ASR Media, which was a video production, and Social T Marketing and PR. And I was with Social T for almost 8 years until the merger. So I feel like I've been there from the beginning.
And when you first joined Social T, is what you're doing now what you thought you might be doing?
No.
Tell us about that.
I was just thinking about that. I said that to a couple coworkers recently because we also produce Fig Magazine, Fig Lehigh Valley. Mm-hmm. With my role in operations within the last couple months, something I've been tasked with doing is coming up with how does Turnstone produce this magazine? So now I'm writing processes and procedures on print media. Oh. And I never once thought that was in my future. When I joined Social T, I was a year out of college. I had been working at the Saucon Valley Country Club. That was like my college job. And when I came back home, I decided to coach some soccer where I grew up, and I just kind of was like, I'm going to take the year. I'm not in a rush. I met Ashley Russo. She was a member at the club, and within that year, she was like, what are you doing? Why are you still here? Like, asked me what I went to school for, and it was right around the time Tina was starting Social T, and Ashley and Tina are obviously collaborators and friends, so she was like, you need to meet Tina. Brought me on. Tina had, like, one other person, and I was just doing whatever was necessary. Mm-hmm. And never really had like, this is what I want to do. I just knew I liked communication. I liked community. I liked working for women. So that felt really aligned. And then once COVID hit, which was only 2 years in, is when we really as a business figured out like, what does this look like? And I went into more of like the content and the organizational side of marketing and less of the actual creative. And that's kind of where it's branched for me from then. Yeah.
In your current role and through that journey, is there still opportunity to be creative?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think of creativity because I'm not naturally like, I must draw, I must make, right? Like, I think I'm creative all the time. Mm-hmm. I think of that in terms of solutions and ways of doing things differently. I like building structures for people to do those creative things. I love being like, let's make this process easier for you. And then to see somebody on the social team make like the most amazing reel, I'm like, oh, you couldn't have done that if you didn't have the time and if you weren't organized. So I see them all tied together.
That is such good insight, because I'm with you that I think no matter what field you're in, everybody's creative.
Yes.
Our sparks come from different places, and what that looks like is a little varied.
I think it can be like a heavy word, like I'm creative. Well, like everyone can be creative in different ways. It doesn't have to mean that you're like Picasso, you know? And maybe that's just me being like, I'm not artistic, so I got to think about it a different way.
But it's your fallback.
Yeah.
But I think it's also true. What do you think about this when people say they're entrepreneurial? That you can be entrepreneurial and be doing anything. Just do it your way with creativity, with innovation.
I agree. I don't think of myself as entrepreneurial, because when I think of entrepreneurs, I think of like someone starting a business, right? Like there's so much weight to that word as well. But like I am.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of agency and I like to make my own decisions. And it's a different mindset, I think, when you think about that word.
Love it. Let's talk about your involvement in the community. You're a young professional. You're on some boards, including Danny's Ride.
Yes.
I know, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful nonprofit with a great mission. How did you decide that it was time to get involved with a nonprofit organization?
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I have been a part of a work culture that's encouraged community involvement from the beginning. So if it was something I never had an interest to do, I probably wouldn't have stayed right where I am. I knew that was part of my journey and my growth was going to be. I actually have a collaborator, Sarah Dams, who owns Surratt Design. We do a lot of work with her. She was involved with Danny's Ride in the very beginning. And she was like, I want you to meet Nancy, the founder. She's looking for marketing help. They need more board members. This was like within a year of Nancy creating it. And now we're at year five. So it was just like another woman bringing me along. And when I heard about the mission and how Nancy's tied to it, it just seemed like a very easy thing to put my energy into. And I love how specific it is. All we do is provide free transportation for people in recovery. And that one thing has a domino effect, ripple effect for people on their journey in recovery, whether it's to outpatient, job interviews, going to their kids' school plays, things like that. So I like aligned with the fact that we were just doing one thing. It wasn't muddy. I could feel really focused on that.
So Rachel, when you first joined this board, and we'll use Danny's Ride continuing in with that organization, how did you feel as a young professional joining the board of a nonprofit organization?
Stressed. I think what was really nice is Danny's Ride was growing as I was growing.
Yes.
So I didn't feel like I was joining a board and walking into a room and being like, oh my gosh, I do not belong here. I still was, you know, everybody has insecurities, but it felt really aligned for me that I was able to help shape what the board is. And I feel like that's the way it worked with Social Tea. Like I started when it was something small too and was able to have a hand in that. So I would say on the Women's Business Council, on the other hand, I joined that board three or four years ago. I was just excited to join that board because I've been serving on committees. So like at least I feel like I did it the way that you get familiar and you understand the mission before you kind of dive all in.
Mm-hmm. Are there any things that you do at work, Rachel, that you find yourself taking out into your volunteer life? Any special skills or lessons learned at work that you then apply as a board member?
Yeah, I would say I tend to always lean into that operations part of my brain of hearing how we're doing something and making a suggestion of how we can do it better. Should we document something? I'm not trying to bring down the vibe always of being like, oh, I think this could be better. But that's, I think, and then people look to me for that. But I would say vice versa. I feel like there's so many times I'm in these board situations where I just hear different people communicate that I'm able to take that back to work. I love that part of hearing how someone handles maybe a conflict or just like differing ideas and how they are able to speak with such respect and also grace but get their point across. That's something I've always really looked up to and have tried to emulate that back into work.
And Rachel, how do you balance getting involved in community and also continuing in career growth?
For me, and I think for Turnstone, they're like intertwined. I don't think it has to be an and other. It's never a question. Like if I have a board meeting during the workday, that's my work day, right? So I think I'm just really, really lucky that it doesn't have to be something I have to give up one for the other. We also just as a company are aligned with community. So people always are like, you're at everything. And I'm like, yeah, but I choose to be at everything. Right. Nobody's making me do that. That's something that I want to be a part of, that I want our brand to be a part of and to represent who we are well in the community. So that's been just a nice part of my job. I think of it as a perk.
Let's talk a little bit about more about your opinion about the Lehigh Valley. As a young professional, and this valley is so collaborative. Yeah. We were just talking earlier with Jared Mast about it. And pretty much every time I do this show, we talk about collaboration. Why do you think it's working so well in the Lehigh Valley?
I think there's just like a shared ethos, whether you realize you have it or not. I think whether you grew up here or you moved here, I don't know who created it, where we could, you know, go back in history to be like, this is what it is. But I love being in a room, whether it's United Way Celebration of Caring, and you see all the nonprofits that are being supported by all these corporations and then all the people there. Like, there, it's just, I've always lived here. So like, this is my life. I've always loved the Valley. I never wanted to leave. But it's nice to hear other people who didn't grow up here and say like, we don't have this where I live. And I think that's just really validating for someone who like already thinks this place is great.
Right.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to other young professionals who maybe haven't yet taken the step out into community?
I think you just need to find something or a person, like whether it's a cause you care about or a person you trust to help take you along and get you in that room. I think when I joined the Women's Business Council, like formally as a board member, I was like, okay, I already like know a lot of these people. But something just happens where whether it's just that hour you sit together in that room, the next time you go into a bigger room at an event or something, it's just, you're like, I have people here. And then they meet your people. There's just, I think when you find things that you align with, it's easier. Everything just gets easier in your life. So I think it's just like kind of taking that first step.
Another question about the Valley. Where do you think we're headed? What are you optimistic about within the Lehigh Valley?
You know, for everything I do, I'm not a great future thinker. I'm just like happy in the moment, and I kind of trust it's all going to work out, which is crazy because I'm like, I'm never going to leave West Bethlehem. Like, that's where I'm going to live forever. You know what I mean? Like, so.
I love that.
I think I just trust in the people who have.
We're leading.
Who have it moving along. Like, I see Marcy Lesko, I'm like, I don't need to worry about that, right? Like, I just trust the people that I've been able to meet. I just recently completed the Leadership Lehigh Valley course.
Oh, did you? Great.
Through NCC. And that was a really nice experience for me because I was in a room of people who don't get to do what I do all the time. So they were like, oh my God, I didn't know this existed in the world and things like that. So I just love that even we have businesses who invest in employees to learn more about the Valley and all of those things. It was such a rewarding experience.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Well,
Leadership Lehigh Valley is definitely a way. Any skills that you are working on right now? Always interested in knowing what people are focused on and trying to maybe get more expertise in or learn to be better at.
Something that recently just happened was just like asking for help. I'm a very, you know, independent person and I can do a lot of things, but my calendar was out of control. So I brought it up and I was like, I just need permission to not go to these things, right? Like I just needed a little help. And we found like 12 hours in my calendar that literally 1 week and I got done what I needed to get done. So I think vulnerability sometimes and reiterating vision is something that we're like really focused on, especially, you know, leadership down to make sure everyone feels that they know what's going on. So there's a lot of changes. But yeah, I would say those
That's
two things.
Great. And my last question, Rachel, if you were talking to someone who is a senior at Susquehanna, like you were a few years ago, what's the best career advice you might give them?
To take a couple years and take it all in. Like as you go through things, don't feel like you're tied to something forever. Take time to form opinions of the people that you work with, who lead you, and figure out like why you feel those things about them. So, which is really more just like thinking about who you are and where you want to be. I hire a lot of interns and a lot of recent college grads, and they're just like, I need to know everything right away, and I must be perfect at this job, and all those things. And it's, I think it's trusting the people who are leading you mm-hmm. is going to take you farther. Granted, if you have to make sure you feel aligned with the, where you're at, you don't want to trust blindly. But I think getting to know yourself and trying to see where you fit in, and then if you do find that trusted mentor, like, just latch on. Mm-hmm. Just like, don't let go, because they're going to take you where you might not even know you should be going.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. Well, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you. This was great.
Sure. And listeners, again, we've been joined by Rachel Moyer, and Rachel is Vice President of Operations for Turnstone Creative. And again, thanks for joining us on the program again this month. We just have such a great opportunity to talk to so many rising leaders and current leaders and volunteers that make this valley so impactful and so important to all of us. I'm Laurie Hackett, the host of A Closer Look, and I look forward to seeing you next month.